Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Ando.
And I'm Fer.
And we host Niñas Bien Podcast.
We want to invite you to listen to our show.
Niñas Bien means good girls in Spanish, but you have to know that this is not a podcast for good girls.
Or for girls at all. It is a comedy podcast, so everyone is welcome to listen.
We talk about sex, relationships, technology.
We recommend movies and TV shows and discuss pop culture in general.
And there is Chisme Ajeno too.
A section we have just to gossip about everyone. So you'll find something you like here.
And you'll practice your Spanish.
The cleanest Spanish you'll find, we promise.
And if you already hablas español,
vamos a ser tus nuevas amigas. We'll be your friends for the non-Spanish speakers.
New episodes every Monday and Thursday.
Hosted by Acast and available to all audio platforms.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Welcome to Wood Talk. Now here are three guys who like to use a lot of words, yet say nothing at all. Mark, Shannon, and Matt.
What's happening, everybody? It's show number 559, and on today's show, we're talking about prefab cabinets. Should you? Like in rail construction, setting grinder angles, and router bit safety. But before we get to that, we want to let you know that Wood Talk is brought to you by Rockler. Rockler has been helping customers create with confidence for over 65 years. Rockler's giving away a $250 gift card to one lucky Wood Talk listener. Enter for your chance to win before November 30th at rockler.com/woodtalk.
Oh, yeah, that's me. I was just daydreaming.
Good job.
Every episode, I wonder, is he going to get it this time?
No. I was thinking of my question I got to answer at the end of the show. If you want to help support the show, you can do so by going to patreon.com/woodtalk and signing up to become a patron of the show. This time we're thanking Billy Peterson, Nick Kudemeyer? I don't know. Alexander Klein, Ron Burton, and David Murphy.
Appreciate the support, everyone. Okay, so before we get to our What's on the Bench segment, we got a little bit of kickback here. One thing I'll mention here before this. So a gentleman named Joe stopped by the shop, and he bought some sandpaper while he was here, backsidesandpaper.com if you're interested. And nice guy. And he tells me something. It blew my mind. He goes, "So by the way, you guys read my review on the show. This was the Joe that gave us a 1-star review and said how much he loves the show."
That's awesome.
Do you guys remember that?
Yes, absolutely.
He goes, "I heard that." He's like, "No, there's no way I did that." And he went back and checked, and he couldn't find any way to change the star rating to correct it. So it just is what it is.
That's great. They're
like, "It was you. That's awesome." So yeah, we had a good laugh about that.
No, you can't change it now, Joe. It's out there. It's awesome.
Too late.
Yeah. We read it.
It's part of Wood Talk lore.
Yeah, I don't think those reviews do anything anyway, so who cares? But it was a lot of fun. We had fun with it. Yeah. Shannon, you want to get this next piece of kickback here? Because it's about you.
Yay. Joe says, I just finished listening to episode 558, Suck It Flat, which features an update on all things plywood by Shannon. How was that by me?
You did most of the talking, like where we were talking idea. About the problems with plywood.
And I will say that Mark said, "Shannon, tell us about it." But that's
I
all.
Did. I invited so Mark's the fault. Pain.
It's Mark's fault. As always, this is Joe talking. I learned a lot from Shannon's experience and knowledge of the lumber industry. And as sometimes happens, his answers were a little bit lengthy. When this happens, I worry that Matt and Mark will lose focus. As a result, I created a tool to help you guys stay engaged and have fun at the same time. Shannon Bingo. I think I would call this Shannon drinking game. I've attached the card below. So we have, you know, your typical, we'll put this in our show notes.
Yeah.
Let's see. It's a grid, you know, your free space. It's just a little picture of me. It says, we love Shannon. I love that. Your options are, so anytime I say these things, you put your little chip on here. So we have dead flat, Lee Nielsen. Really? I don't feel I say that a lot.
Some of these I'm not sure about.
Yeah. Osmo. That one's good. Oh Lord. Lazy nurses. To be fair, I don't think I've ever said lazy nurse.
No. We don't have to read the whole thing either. I think if you have a couple of favorites, pick them, and then we'll put this in the show notes if people want to play along, because it looks like it's going to be fun.
Astragal, nice. Substrate, that's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Bound moisture. Nice. Use case. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, that's my day job, like, talking, yeah, right there.
He says this every episode.
Yeah. Well, I think, honestly, for all of us, we probably all have those, like, vocal habit things that we
was actually just going to say, Joe, I challenge you to come back with a Matt and a Mark bingo, because I think that would be really fun, and I think it would be fun for the audience to play along.
Yeah,
you know, maybe we should start offering these cards as Patreon like rewards. Get your free laminated,
though. Like, where is Invariably? Why is that not on here?
Invariably is a good one.
I thought it was on there.
Fleamangle. That's another.
Maybe that's what he meant by inherently. I feel like I say invariably much more than inherently. Although I feel like I say invariably less, because now I'm like worried about it.
Thinking about it.
Yeah. I think like ring
your
nose.
People have gotten into my head. I actually like the inner monologue is running. It's like, you can't say that.
Yeah.
I even do that at work.
Pick a different word.
No, this is
I do
great.
Find it funny that Hand Tool School is on here, because I often get told that I don't promote my stuff enough.
Well, although it is interesting. He put Guild on there too. You don't say Guild very often.
Probably not in the context
of going
your guild.
To a guild or something.
I was going
to
say, there was a while there where I was teaching. Yeah. I did like 57 guilds in one summer.
Yeah.
So I said that a lot. I wasn't referring to the guild.
Right. All right, yeah, we'll move on here. I got one from Jordan Kelly. It says, I was watching a slightly aged Tom Hanks movie, The Money Pit. That's a great movie. It's a
classic
real good
film.
Movie. And it turned out to be a pretty informative show on proper remodel techniques, and most importantly, proper table saw techniques. What do you guys think? So he has a little screen cap. We'll also put that in the show notes for you guys. It is a picture of someone doing a cross cut, two-handed, on a portable table saw, one hand on each side, acting as the miter gauge. So this picture is funny. I think this is something that you might not just see in The Money Pit. You might just see it on any job site.
Yeah, I've seen this on job sites.
Pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, right next to the guy spraying lacquer while smoking. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, this is what happens. I don't think there's really... frankly, you would think it's like, oh, well, this is just like those advertisements where you see someone using a miter saw from the back. And they take, right? Because they don't know what they're doing with it. And it's, very, very funny. I actually think this is very realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's super common.
It's not great, but it's super common. So it is what it
and
is.
The crazy thing is, there's a lot of people who do this because they're quite successful with it. Like,
yeah,
they've been doing it that way without incident, like for years. And you just wonder, like, how?
Yeah, well,
they're that
look,
good. They're
I
that
mean,
good.
There's
Shannon.
A certain amount
I guess,
of,
yeah.
There's a manual dexterity thing, right? Like, you go to a circus, you see people throwing knives at other people. Eventually, some people just get good at things that are dangerous. And it's totally fine.
Cross-cutting freehand on a table saw is like throwing knives in a circus.
Totally.
Like,
it's exactly the
That'd
same
be
thing.
A good just, show title if it wasn't so long.
I'm just saying, people get skillful. What we don't see at the circus is how often somebody gets stabbed, right? So these things are going to happen.
That's rehearsal.
Right, exactly. So, I don't know. Yeah, it's good
stuff. The cut on here, that's a pretty straight cut. He's following that line like dead on straight perfect.
Yeah. There is nothing wrong with that cut.
I have to say that part about this picture is like, I'm impressed by how accurately that cut is actually following that line.
I'm impressed by the fact that there's seems to be very little tear out. You know, there's no zero clearance insert. He's probably using a high tooth count blade. So, I mean, there's a lot going on that's right in this picture.
It's the top side of the cut, so you would see less on that side at least.
But still.
Show us your bottom.
Show us the bottom, baby. You want to really impress
us. There's your show title. Show us your bottom.
Okay. All right. Let's get to what's on the bench. I got a cat who I haven't seen in a while, and he thinks it's playtime now. So I don't know if you guys are hearing that, but he's bugging me. Okay, what's on the bench for me? I just finished Nicole's Closet. I finally hammered this thing out. Yeah,
what?
I mean, this was months in the making. You know how it goes here. Like, there's lots of other stuff distracting me.
Unfortunately, yes.
Yeah, than just the project. But finally, the project was done. There's a little bit, you know, just a little fine-tuning things that still need to happen. We're doing a kitchen remodel soon, and we have a bar top that's just a probably like an inch and a quarter granite that would be a shame to just see it like go into a landfill somewhere. So I'm going to take one of those pieces and repurpose that as the top for the chest of drawers that's in the closet. So that still has kind of, it's got the plywood top on it, so it doesn't look great. But for now, I think that's it's going to have to be what it is until we get this kitchen thing going. Totally happy with it. Had some, you know, lessons learned. This is not my forte. It was definitely an experience. But I have a lot of other places in the house where I'd like to either redo a built-in or put a new built-in in that spot. And this was definitely a confidence builder that, like, all right, like, I've seen how things can go wrong. I've seen how to prepare, what I could do better next time. And I feel pretty confident about it. So this was a good learning project for me. But most importantly, Nicole now has a place to put her stuff, because that was a real problem in this
house. That's important.
Very, very important. And someone's like mentioned something in the comments on one of the videos about how, you know, like which shelves are mine. And I'm like, that's generous of you to think that any of those shelves would be mine.
I have a little Walmart fabric cube in the corner.
Yeah, I think on the bottom shelf, I did see one of my pairs of sneakers that were accidentally placed in that room. I'm sure that'll be corrected today.
See, I don't have any space in our closet at all.
No, I have a dresser. So my chest of drawers that I made ages ago in the guild, that is all mine. And that's it. That's really it right now. So I don't really have a lot
similar
of
similar lives.
Look, guys, I mean, not exactly a fashionista over here.
Not really a hang bar kind of guy, Mark.
No, there's nothing to hang. Oh, man. Anyway.
Nice.
So that's it for me. Shannon, what about you?
I'm just going to say I'm having finally a triumph in multitasking. Ooh. Things at the day job have been really, really crazy because we're trying to launch a whole product line and it's been a lot of long hours. It's really fun. Also, all those years where I barely applied any finish in my own shop, karmic balance is coming back to me because I've been doing nothing but applying finish for about a month and a half straight. Like 40, 50 hours a week applying finish in various shades and colors and testing all kinds of different manufacturers. And I got to say, commercial finishing equipment is so cool, like six head sprayers and flood coaters and things like that. But long story short, my big what's on the bench is I glued up a tabletop.
Like, nice.
I'm lucky to get like 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. So I've really zeroed in on organizing my time in the shop and trying to maximize the 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there. And, you know, it's kind of funny because it probably involves 10 minutes of like planning for 5 minutes of shop time. But the 10 minutes of planning I can do like while I'm driving to work or like in a spare moment on like a Trello board or something at work. And then when I get home, it's like, I know exactly what I need to do. But my big triumph of the week was I was finally able to glue up a tabletop for a coffee table. Nice. I have four projects in process right now in my shop, which is just terrible. I really gotta
drive me nuts.
Do something about that. Well, and what this may not work, but the plan is like I'm doing little by little on some of these projects because it actually makes it easier to move them around. Like instead of having a bunch of boards loose, now they're one tabletop and it's going to make it a lot easier to stick it somewhere. So I'm kind of like cleaning and like, oh, well, since I'm holding these boards, let's glue them together and make one board. So, okay, now the table for that coffee or the top for the coffee table is done. I can set that aside and come back to it in, you know, a week or whatever. But it's been a challenge, but in some respects, kind of a triumph. I talk about this. Get out your bingo cards, folks. I talk about this in the hand tool school a lot, like planning your time. Because, you know, everybody's got this problem. Like, you know, they work at, you know, their job all day. They've got kids and things. And it's like, I got 5 minutes in the shop. And you just kind of stand there and you spend 5 minutes going, okay, where was I? You know, what do I do now? And then like your allotted 10 minutes is you're 7 minutes into it when you finally start working. So the idea of like breaking down your projects into manageable tasks and, you know, keeping an actual physical list. I'm a big proponent of like the pen and paper because there's something very satisfying about crossing it off, you know, and it's hung on the wall in my shop and it's been effective. It's slow, but I'm making forward progress on all four of these projects at the same time with like 5 to 10 minutes a day. So yeah, not a whole lot to show for it, but I feel fulfilled and content that at least I'm moving ahead.
Nice. That inherently sounds like a good use case for bound moisture.
Oh, yeah, boy. Invariably it's a good move, but
quite the substrate you got going on.
It certainly is.
Actually, speaking of substrates, I'm using Tasmanian blackwood on this. I'd only ever turned it before, but I was talking about koa on the Lumber Update podcast, and I was saying that Australian or Tasmanian blackwood is almost a dead ringer for koa. I'm liking this stuff. I've turned it a bunch of times for pins, but to me, it doesn't really count. As far as like workability and things, no, just turning, like, you know, it's hard or it's soft, and you know, you can get away with a lot on a lathe, but actually like cutting joinery into it and planing it, it's a really nice wood to work. Substantially cheaper than koa too.
Nice. Bonus. All right, Matt, what do you got going on?
I'm still plugging away on cabinets. I got the cabinets I had made a couple weeks ago installed. So those are kind of in place and off the list. One of the, I guess the nice benefits of this project is like once I slam the cabinet together, I just put it in the house. So I'm not like filling my shop with finished things, which is kind of a nice plus. So I got those installed. And then one of the videos they were planning on doing like a long time ago when Donovan was here and we were still doing all the framing was to have him come out with his portable CNC and like cut some of the cabinets and see what that's kind of like. So we did that this week and that was pretty cool. He set up the CNC, like I pulled my workbench out of the shop and we slapped the CNC right where the workbench would have gone, and we cut all the cabinets for the pantry, which was interesting to see.
Yeah.
Different.
To make you want
interesting.
One?
Interesting. I don't know. It was okay. I don't know. It's like, it would be cool, but like, I also kind of like cutting the wood myself.
Yeah.
You know how, if I was doing this, like, I'm going to sell cabinets now. Absolutely.
Yeah,
for sure.
Right.
Like, I just got to make a few cuts on some plywood and put some stuff. I mean, the nice part was, like, it did all the line boring. Like, that all being integrated into the panel already done. I mean, if you're going to do drawer slides, it could drill all the pilot holes for the drawer slides. So you just put them on right away without just having to do any kind of alignment.
Just getting
them
located ahead of time like that is nice.
Yeah, so like, that's all taken care of, but it's like you spend all the time, like, you put the time in up front at your desk on the computer.
Right.
I'm like, I spent enough time at my desk on my computer that like when I go in the shop and finally cut stuff and actually work, I'm like, oh, thank God, I'm finally out here doing something.
Yeah, for sure.
I still want to have one just because I want to be able to learn and do that kind of stuff, but I don't think I'd be cutting cabinet parts on a CNC. I'd be trying to cut other things, doing weird stuff, cutting joinery or cutting, you know, curve parts or things like that. I think that would be really valuable to have, but I don't have any interest in building cabinetry in the future ever again.
Well, you already said you don't work with plywood much to begin with anyway, so it wouldn't be, you know, too useful for you for that.
Honestly, the use case that I find most compelling is what you just said. Like, see, now I'm going to find reasons to put these words in, but like locating shelf pens or like locating hardware on drawer fronts.
Yep.
You know, imagine a chest of drawers and those have got to be exactly in a line and exactly spaced or it's so obvious. Yes, you can use dividers and there's all kinds of ways to do it, but like it's so much easier to do in a computer model because it like snaps to like the center of the drawer. You can set the spacing and, you know, divide by however many drawers and it does all that. That to me, like if I could just throw all my parts on that and have it do that stuff, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah, one of the components we cut was the back panels because the pantry cabinets are just like open shelving essentially. So the back panel is V groove paneling, and we did all the math in the computer to put the V groove evenly. Like it's supposed to be a 6-inch V groove, but like in reality, like the box could be a little bit different than that for the actual space. So we actually divide up the actual dimension to like an even number of spacings and then had the CNC cut all the V's at the exact spacing, all parallel to each other. And I'm not worried about like, okay, how am I going to do this in the shop manually to like get them all lined up perfectly and cut them all nice and pretty.
Yeah.
It's just done.
Yeah. But you're right. There's a lot on the latch your computer. Like that would be very bad for me. like all of my, when I build a project and like I have to create a model to go with it because you're like selling the project or whatever, I have so much work to do after I've built the project because like my SketchUp model is basically just a couple of boxes for proportions. You know, there's no joinery. Mm-hmm. There's many times there's no individual parts. It's just like a three-dimensional box that I like just extruded. You know, there's my case. It's like the amount of work that I have to do to clean up the model, like let alone have a CNC be able to interpret it. Yeah. That would be a nightmare
to
for
make
me.
It accurate. It reminds me of that Cabinotch company that I used for cabinets. And interestingly enough, one of the questions we have later, I'll talk about that a little bit more, but being able to just kind of have these RTA cabinets ready to go, all the joinery and everything is located perfectly and all the little interlocking pieces are located perfectly. It can be nice. It's cool to see people who know what they're doing with that and who can just kind of batch this stuff out like it's nothing. Cool. All right. Well, you guys know who else had Jack Plane substrates, cupping, and lazy nurses?
Wow.
Just got like four in one shot there.
That's pretty good.
I would appreciate Rockler to take some of the lazy nurse heat.
Maybe. How about I read this mid-roll then?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. Sounds good, okay, Mark.
Thank you.
It's all you. Take it away.
Been working hard on it. The best gifts are the handmade gifts. Rockler put together a handmade gift guide that includes all the tools and supplies that you need to make gifts for your friends and family. The guide includes over 100 free plans so that you can get inspired to make the perfect gift. You'll also save on top gift making supplies during their handmade gift sale. Get a jump on the holidays. You know, it's coming up soon. This is that time of year where you I'm going to make some stuff for the holidays. And then you go, Christmas is far away. I got plenty of time. Like,
I don't usually start that for another 3 months.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and then you're at Christmas Eve, you're waiting for finish to dry. You're on forums going, what's the fastest drying finish? We're calling your local Rockler store.
I need to apply finish at all. Can I finish with glue?
Yeah, that there one works well. People do that. Well, look, you can find everything you need at rockler.com. We're going to put a link in the show notes to the handmade gift guide that you could take a look at. And of course, on I don't know, are they open on Christmas Eve? Maybe on the 23rd. If you need some finish and you need something that dries fast, go to your local Rockler and they'll be able to hook you up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could buy a lot of gift kits for $250 gift card that you might win.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, we've got a voicemail and we're going to try to figure this out for Mr. Alex.
Hello, Mark, Matt, and Shannon. My name is Alex Klein. And I actually live in Voorheesville, New York. I can't do an accent. I'm in the process of trying to build a wormwood-like gaming table with a magnetic rail in it. And I'm trying to figure out how best to attach the legs to the actual rails of the table. Now, I've looked at hardware, like cam hardware and things like that, but there's nothing really that works that I think would be substantial, and I can't find the hardware that Wormwood uses on their tables. So if you guys have any suggestions for how I'm supposed to connect the rails to the table and make it look good and not have hardware exposed, please let me know. Besides, I'm Mortise and Tenon. Also, Matt's the best one out of all of you. Thanks. Bye.
All right. So since this is your buddy, Matt, why don't you answer this question?
There you go.
I'm trying to look up
you,
what
Matt.
The heck a wormwood table is.
Are you Googling it right now?
I am right now.
W-Y-R-M.
Yeah. So they're one of those cool gaming... peripheral gaming,
just go to the guild and you buy the gaming table build.
Right?
There you go, yeah.
You ask me about that one, I can answer that question.
That's the extent of gaming tables that I know. Watching Mark build one.
I'm assuming they flat pack like in order to ship, so I'm guessing it's all knockdown, and that's what he's trying to emulate here.
So I guess, he said no mortise and tenon in his voicemail, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't say why.
Yeah, just kind of threw that into the end.
I guess I'm just confused. Like, what? It just looks like a normal rail and leg thing, doesn't it?
Yeah,
it does to me.
I had to dig. I guess the magnetic rail thing, that's to like attach accessories to the outside,
right?
I didn't get that at first because they say that like our magnetic rail thing, but they don't really ever actually say why.
Yeah. And is it the modular table or is it the prophecy gaming table? One is hexagonal and the other is like a traditional square.
Are we going back to talking about knockdown hardware now? Is that what we're doing?
I think it's got to
really matter, right?
He said no mortise and tenon. I'm guessing for whatever reason he needs it to be knockdown. Solutions for knockdown that are, you know, more robust. I mean, there's a lot of shop-made solutions if you look into workbench builds that feature removable rails. I know the split top Rubo does this, where you're using those big barrel nuts and bolts. Mm-hmm. That's all stuff that would happen on the inside to secure them. That's one option. Festool, if you want to spend a whole lot of money on the gear to do it, Festool's connector system, especially if you go for like the DF700, the big boys. I did a bunk bed with that, and those things are rock solid. It's just a matter of, like, you got to have the right tooling, and they are not cheap. Anything else you guys can think of? I mean, there's tons. Whenever you buy commercial furniture, you find tons of this, like, a lot of it's not great, but you'll find a lot of different ways that legs and aprons are connected to one another in a non-permanent fashion. Lots of ways.
Yeah, like those angle bracket type things that like a hanger bolt into the leg.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Well, actually, you know what? Go to Rockler.com and search Knockdown Hardware. And yeah, they got a whole bunch of stuff here. Variations on, cam lock type stuff. Those like Z-clip type looking thingies, corner brackets. Yeah, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. I still say, like, if you don't make a full mortise and tenon, like the idea of a stub tenon to locate the piece... Mm-hmm. is so key. Like, and it can be a relatively, not a loose fit, but like a loose friction fit so that it locates and then you screw it down. So like it prevents it from like shifting around while you're
locking the hardware. Yeah, you don't have any like twisting of the rail in there.
I mean, right. At the very least, dowels or something for locating.
Right, yes. Some sort of wood to wood thing. But then the other thing you have to ask is like, yes, wormwood does it for shipping, but like once you've assembled this gaming table, how often are you knocking it down? So, like semi knockdownable, like pocket screws. Like, I mean, you could pocket screw the rails into the legs and technically that's knockdown, mm-hmm. you know? Yeah. I mean, it's, I always say that like how often are we knocking this stuff down? Like if it's a piece of dorm room furniture for your kid, that might make a lot more sense because you're moving it, you know, every year, but
could be apartment table. Living too. That's, you know.
Yeah, that's true. It's true.
And there is, but if you want to go on the commercial hardware side, there are the knockdown corner brackets. So the rails are just essentially connected together and then the legs bolt into the bracket. So the rails are never actually physically attached to the legs at all. They connect through the bracket. So you can buy those. That's another option. Or you can make your own with like just put a piece of wood there on an angle to connect the rails together and you can bolt your leg in from the back. That's another... This is not a new thing.
Yeah. Yeah. People have figured it out. It's just you got to look into it. I mean, and you talk to the three of us, we're typically making these permanent structures. Most of the time, we're not as well versed in the knockdown stuff as others might be.
Years ago, I made a big armoire and it had those like cam nut things like you would find in really cheap furniture. Mm-hmm. But I think it was Rockler or the other Rockler that I bought it from. Mm-hmm. And it held together, like this was a big piece of furniture. It held together just fine for 20 some years.
As long as you don't move it, everything's great.
Yeah, right.
No problem. I had a couple pieces of furniture like that that were, with the cam bolts and it's like, oh, it's fine as long as it's sitting still. But if you make the mistake of trying to drag it across a carpet, then you're in real trouble.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Rockler sells that hardware that I was talking about.
Okay.
So we'll put a link to that. It's just like a plate you put on the back and then you can bolt your leg to it. And
there you go. Yeah. Throw that in the notes.
Yeah. I saw that. Yeah. That was
good deal. Yeah. Or, you could also ask the Wormwood people. I'm sure they'll tell you exactly what they use.
They probably would.
Maybe they'll just send you a couple of them.
Here's a sample.
Who knows? They may, company like that, they may have something custom, that they do that you're not going to be able to find elsewhere.
It's 3D printed. That's what you should do. 3D print your hardware. Mm-hmm. Be awesome.
Yep. All right. Let's get to some questions from other people that did not leave voicemails. So Bob wrote in. He says, years ago when Mark was moving into a new shop, Colorado maybe, he talked about ordering prefab cabinet bases instead of building them and just installing the face frames, doors, and drawers. I'm moving into a new space and think that this would be the way to go. Is that the way to go, or is that the way that you would go? If yes, any recommendations, preferably in the Pacific Northwest, to keep shipping costs down? So I don't personally have any recommendations. The company I used was Cabinotch, and that's an internet-based thing. You could just order them. shipping is a little bit expensive, but when you look at the overall costs of what's going on here and the labor it's saving you, it might be worthwhile. So I like them. They're okay, though. Don't make the mistake of thinking these are as good as cabinets.
I like them. They're okay.
It's kind of my description for this experience every month that I do with you guys. I like them. They're okay.
They're okay.
The bar is just that low. Yeah.
So they actually are pretty good, but it's made with, like, everything's half inch. So this is, you know, you would think in terms of a bank of cabinets where, as a whole, it tends to be a pretty solid structure, but not quite as good as, you know, if you're making an independent cabinet that's going to just kind of stand alone, where we might use 3/4 for shop furniture. That's going to be a little bit more durable and stand up to the use and abuse a little bit better. So it worked. It did the job. But the other thing to keep in mind here, aside from price is like, it's going to be expensive, but you're being lazy and you don't want to build them. So you have to expect the price to be out there. The thing I don't really like about the Cabinotch specific stuff is if I'm using this for shop furniture, these are actually intended for kitchen and bathroom use, for regular home use. And the way those cabinets are designed, just the accommodations, the type of frames that they develop for them, it's a little bit different than what you might do. So if you're thinking about making shop cabinets, you may not want the standard, you know, lower cabinet door and then upper drawer. Mm. And especially when face frames are involved, you tend to lose a lot of capacity. Where in a shop, we can just kind of make a very bare bones structure. You can go frameless very easily, save a lot of space, and you end up with a more durable, bigger compartment sort of design. It's just like if you go to Home Depot and you see they have like the prefab cabinets that are already ready to go, and you look at them and the cabinet doors are like, you know, raised panel doors. I don't think those look really good in a shop, personally. They look like kitchen cabinets that someone put in a shop. So I think if you're looking at the arrangement, and it's all customizable to a degree, it will still look like something that belongs in a kitchen as opposed to something that belongs in a house.
With those ones, just out of curiosity, how much customizing can you do?
Like, not a lot.
Size-wise, it's just like your standard, okay, here's a 18, here's a 24, here's a 36, that's it?
Yeah, you can pretty much, no, I think you can get actually more granular than that in terms of sizing. But in the end, the thing still, you're limited to, how do I describe it? Like, you see like a blank image that says, I want a cabinet that looks roughly like this. And then you go in and you kind of can tweak some of the measurements on that.
But it's still going to have a top bank and then a lower bank, which could be doors or it could all be drawers or, okay.
Yeah, exactly.
For your base units.
Yeah, and the thing
but
is,
then you're stuck at what, 24 deep? Or they have variable depth.
I think you can change that
bases
as well. I don't know.
Really?
I haven't really changed the depth very much on these things. But I mean, keep in mind, I didn't make, I didn't do the bottoms. I only did the tops because.
Yeah, you're a top.
I'm a top. Because I'm just going to let that one go.
Oh, you didn't.
No, you're right. I said something that made it so that I didn't let it go. What the hell's wrong with me, Matt? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
I'm not going to answer that. There's a lot wrong with me.
Yeah. Yeah. So in Arizona, when I got the shop done there, I did, in that case, go with bottom cabinets on that. I just didn't like the way that they looked. So then when I moved, I only had uppers done when I went to Denver just because I did the miter station and I didn't feel like making the upper cabinets. Didn't really need them to be too fancy. So I was able to just kind of like convert them. I didn't get the face frames done. I just kind of went frameless and then I put slab doors in front of them. And it worked just fine. So the uppers saved me a lot of time there. But, you know, the thing is, Matt, you're doing this with your kitchen. If you're making shop cabinets, and I'm guilty of it. I bought this Cabinotch stuff. Is it really that hard? Like, is there really, especially if we're just talking about the shelves, we're not even talking about the drawers, the doors, things like that. We're just talking about the casework. I mean, is it really that hard?
Not really.
And especially with the cost and the quality drop that you would have. I'm finding it, having done this in the past, finding it very difficult to recommend someone does this if they have the tools and space to do it themselves.
I'm glad you said that because it's kind of what I've been thinking this whole time and I've been kind of biting my tongue because I did this when I first moved into my shop. It was really easy. More importantly, because I didn't need the niceties, I just went frameless and I was able to fully customize. Well, the first thing is like when you're buying modular cabinets, you're buying like a base unit and a top unit, and you can slightly customize its width or things like that. But I built like cabinets to fit the space. Yeah, so if I had 60-inch long space, I used a 60-inch piece of plywood for the bottom, and I used like adjustable feet. Matt, I think I saw you using some adjustable cabinet feet in your Instagram. I bought them at Rockler, by the way. And, you know, I had killer support, and, you know, you could level it and everything. So it was super easy because, you know, I just cut out a 60-inch long by, I think it was probably 24-inch deep piece. And then it was just some dado work to break up the cabinets and throw thing on the top. In fact, I used probably 2x construction material to run like braces across the top, because then I put a countertop on top of that. Mm-hmm. It was super easy, and so much faster, because I wasn't taking a box and then setting it next to another box and stacking a bunch of boxes. I just bought one big box. Yeah. Now, I couldn't move it around very much because it was super heavy once it was all done, but what was, you know, why do I need to move them around, you know? Yeah. You know, plywood is expensive, but you're still buying plywood when you buy cabinets. You're still paying for the plywood. Maybe they're getting it cheaper because they're buying it by the truckload. But if it's your shop, this is what's really funny. It shows you where my priorities are. If it's your shop, like, I want it to be just right. Like, and I want to customize the spaces, because I know that I'm going to put these tools here. Or I'm going to, you know, put a drawer of backside sandpaper in one spot.
As you should.
Drawer. You should have a dedicated drawer for backside sandpaper, right? That never gets opened in my shop. But, you know, I wanted that, you know, custom fit type nature. And it wasn't, dare I say it was fun. It was my shop. I was having a blast.
Yeah. I mean, when I made Nicole's closet, after I did the big units were done, I still had two more pieces. One was an upper and one was a lower chest of drawers. And all we're talking about is the shell construction on this stuff. And when I was doing those, after it was done, it would, like, it took me a few hours to get those together. And I'm like thinking to myself, just sort of recalibrating my thinking on this stuff when it comes to shop cabinets. I'm like, why would I ever do what I did before? The problem was, I could tell you at that time with my mindset, I was so inundated with decisions at the time of building the dream shop. Mm. After you do that, you have a lot of decisions to make, a lot of decisions about, like, outlet placement, like every little detail, trying to hammer that out. And then once I finally got in, I'm like, okay, now I'm going to spend a month building cabinets, right? And I was like, I don't feel like doing that. I'd really like to just make some regular furniture. So I wanted to fast forward the process. That's kind of like the mindset I was in at the time. But now, just thinking about it now, I don't really see myself doing that in the future. I can give you an example here. So they have one cabinet. This is 24 inches wide, 34 inches high, depth is 24 inches, two adjustable shelves. I don't think I have a face frame on here just yet. So this would be like frameless, built-in toe kick. And this, again, is going to be all out of half inch. I don't know if they make the shelves out of 3/4, but everything else is half inch. $190 for the single unit, and that doesn't include the shipping yet. Mm-hmm. Right. So once you start,
I can see it if you're doing a whole kitchen.
Yeah.
But like for shop stuff, like, I don't.
It's real hard to justify.
I don't know if it really makes sense for shop stuff, where it's like you want things to be non-standardized for your shop.
Yeah.
Kitchen's a kitchen. Yeah. Like, it's just, the heights are standardized. The depths are kind of standardized.
Well, did you guys see that link that I sent you, where they basically give you this menu of prefab arrangements of drawers and openings, and you can't change that. You can change the dimensions of those openings, but if you want some custom, you know, shop, I mean, that's the thing, shop stuff is just like a big ass bank of drawers, like a couple of doors, right? There's not a lot of crazy variety you need there for shop stuff. So I don't know, hopefully that helps you. Bob, maybe the bad news is we think you should just build them. But and I say that very hypocritically, having purchased them in the past. I'm fully aware of my hypocrisy here.
I'm actually going to also say a little thing here. He says, preferably in the Pacific Northwest to keep shipping costs down. Matt, you can chime in on this because you're shipping a lot of freight lately. In my experience, it's more the weight that makes the shipping cost, not the distance that it travels.
Just the fact that it has to be certainly shipped at all?
Like, if it's going overseas, yes. But like, you could probably pay very similar if it were shipping from the East Coast, Oregon, is if it were shipping from like Sacramento to Oregon. It's all the weight, you know, the fact that they're moving the truck. I don't know. Have you seen anything, Matt? Like, if you're shipping stuff?
It's a little different. I mean, it's like, let's take like a workbench kit, for example. If I send a workbench kit to, like, I don't know, like where Mark is, Central America, it'd be like $250 from here.
Central America.
That also means other things.
I didn't know Mark moved to Costa Rica. Good for you.
You know, essentially United States. How's that? Is that better? Yeah,
it's quite warm today.
This person going to like the Pacific coast, it'd be like $600. So yeah. It's
okay. I mean, and that may be like an LTL common carrier type thing, yeah. Which is what you have more experience with than me. So, all right. Anyway,
I found a company called PNW Cabinets that does make cabinets. I have a feeling though, when I look at this stuff, there's a little more, this looks a little more high end. I don't know that's the route you want to go. Like the people who actually service people who are shopping for their kitchen cabinets. Cabinage is a little bit more like the builder who wants to do certain things and wants to outsource those other things for the install that they're doing. So I don't know, just Google RTA cabinets in your area and see if you could find something that's a little bit closer. Because like you guys said, unless you can actually pick them up, you're really not going to save a ton on shipping. You're going to drop some money on shipping anyway.
Yeah. Okay. I will put the Cabinage link in the show notes for those who are wondering what the heck, how do you spell Cabinage? This is a question from Bob, different Bob, but another Bob. This is the Bob show. Yeah. He says, thanks for doing this show and answering perplexing questions. I understand about putting a hollow grind on a chisel or plane iron, but my question is about adjusting the tool rest on the grinder to achieve the angle I want. It would seem the angle I would set the rest to would depend upon the thickness of what I am sharpening, and where do you measure the tool rest to the stone? This question made my head hurt a little bit, trying to wrap my head around this. Yes, you're correct. The thickness of what you're sharpening will affect the angle, as will actually the diameter of your stone. You know, as the more you use that stone, the more that stone is going to shrink and it will change things. So what I do is I set, say it's a chisel, I will set the chisel like on the rest, like I'm going to grind, and I put my angle setter on the back of the chisel. So the thickness is accounted for, and I, you know, raise and lower or alter the angle of the tool rest until my bevel gauge sits where I want it to. I say that, and then I think the last time I actually did this was probably 10 years ago. Because the actual angle matters very little. So I actually have, I pretty much have the same angle on most of my tools. Certainly all my plane irons are 25 degrees. I don't really mess around with that a whole lot. So pretty much my angle, my tool rest on my grinder hasn't moved in quite some time. In fact, I might need some like rust blaster on the screw at this point. It's been set for so long. But I urge people not to get too caught up in the exact angle. I mean, a couple degrees here or there is not really going to make much of a difference. The issue comes into play like when you're using a honing guide and like something like the Veritas MK2 that, you know, you're setting up at a bunch of different angles where you're dialing in like 25 or whatever. But most guides now don't really have like, here is the number you're setting it to. You're setting the stone or setting the chisel on the guide and sliding it backward and forward until the bevel meets the stone, and then you're good to go. And that's generally what I do. I've often embraced what I call the Tormek method, which is probably not something they came up with, but use a Sharpie marker on your bevel, like color your bevel, and then set the chisel on the tool rest and grind a little and see how much of the marker you remove. And then you adjust the rest up or down, grind a little until that the markers are moved entirely from the bevel and you're good to go. What's the angle? I don't know. I don't care. And if I'm maybe resetting the bevel, I'm specifically wanting to go to a higher angle or something like that. I suppose you could start to pull out a bevel guide at that point. But like if you're off by a couple of degrees, it's really going to make no difference. The difference is in the repeatability. Once you've set that bevel angle on that chisel, that plane blade, being able to do it again. And that's where that Sharpie marker thing comes into play. So yeah, I would say, don't worry about it. Don't pay any attention to the numbers and literally just hold the chisel in place, grind a little. Does it work? You know, did it hit everything? You're good to go. Mm-hmm. The only caveat to that being if you haven't established a hollow grind before, it will take a little bit. Like if you paint the bevel with a Sharpie, bless you, Mark.
Thank
you. That until that hollow grind is set, the Sharpie's not going to be removed entirely. But that really only takes like a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm. I like the theme of today's show is like anyone who asks us the thing that they want to do, we're like, do not do that thing.
Don't do that.
Do this other thing. All right, Matt, you got
the only reason I say that is I got caught up in numbers when I first started as well. I first was very focused on getting the exact number, and then I slowly realized.
Like, what's it matter?
Yeah, it makes no difference. Yeah.
Okay, Matt.
Anyway.
Okay.
I'm done.
Are you good?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm good.
Let's do it.
All right. This next one is from Concerned Woodworker. This is a YouTube clip of somebody doing stuff potentially dangerous. Anyway.
Kind of parent would name their kid Concerned Woodworker. It's ridiculous. Freaking millennials. That's who would.
Am I right? I represent that.
I know. Well, I saw pictures of your daughter, little router table. Beautiful child.
Little router
adorable.
Table.
Okay.
Oh, it looks, yeah, my older one, Shaper. Okay.
Shaper Jr.?
All right. Everyone talks about table saw safety, and rightfully so, but other tools can be dangerous as well. In this video, a router is being used in what I would consider to be a tremendously dangerous fashion. Even worse, there's a guy in the comments saying you can grab a fluted carbide bit while it's spinning full speed and it will only be uncomfortable, but it won't cut you. Am I misunderstanding something? Or is the idea of grabbing a spinner bit with just your hand just insane? So my interpretation of the second half of this is because
hashtag
in the video,
hold my beer.
They are they're making a tic-tac-toe game on the CNC where they cut out like a grid and then the pieces that go inside the little pockets to make your game work. And the router operations are doing is putting a round over on all the pieces. So I'm assuming that this guy in the comments is talking about grabbing a bearing guided router bit by the bearing, which just sounds stupid. But I mean, yeah, don't do that because you're right there next to the spinning bits. But if for some reason you just happen to grab that bit perfectly by the bearing, it wouldn't cut you, but it sounds stupid. Don't do this.
This is like, who was the first person that picked up, I don't know, think of like an avocado. Something that looks like it's actually poop, right? But someone decided, I'm going to try this one day, and they survived, and they told their friends, and now everybody loves guacamole.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Who's the moron that grabs a bit to figure out if this is going to hurt or not?
I don't really know. I don't know why this is people arguing in the comments about safety. So
this is
where
YouTube
it kind of,
comments.
This like, is where it devolved to, about don't worry about it, it's fine. If you grab the bit, you won't get hurt, which there's such a fine line where you won't get hurt that it's not worth it. Well,
do not grab while spinning. I guarantee you, like Freud and Whiteside have that in their fine print.
If
it's
they don't,
somewhere
they do
in
now.
Their fine print. Yeah, exactly.
Not intended for skin contact.
Oh, gosh. God. All right, so the actual safety thing that we're actually talking about is the way that this is being done, where the guy in the video has the router flipped upside down, is sitting on the on his workbench or his table or whatever, and he's doing his roundover operation that way. I'm going to say this is not, like, it's definitely risky, but it's like, I got to, like, bring back my level of, like, expectations like we did with the Tom Hanks thing with the table saw. Like in my case, I would do this, but I had the benefit of having a leg vise right there, right where I'd be doing it. So router goes in the leg vise. It's a little baby router table now.
Yeah.
Not everybody has work holding options to just randomly hold the router
router
down
table.
Wherever it's going.
I'm confused. Baby router table. Your daughter or the actual thing?
I have a lot of kids.
Okay.
So, you know, just add another one on there. Leg vice router table.
Yeah, okay.
I got to take a step back mentally and be like, where the people are at. Meet people where they're at with where, what they have. And this is probably something that's not that uncommon either. Where especially that router is like a 1970s Craftsman where it has a big flat top. So
and
it's not
fairly
like
heavy.
So it's not like a dome top where it's going to rock everywhere. And he's only doing a roundover, a small roundover. And it's on plastic. So there's no like grain or anything. So, yeah, there are safer ways to do this. I wouldn't do it this way, but also I wouldn't judge someone for doing it this way.
Yeah.
Is my answer to this.
Yeah, I think most of the people who are complaining about it, they see that the router is rocking slightly.
Yes.
It is like it's whatever the router top is not completely dead flat, or maybe there's a cord or something.
Or just
causing
it to
rock.
He's holding the edge of the pieces on there or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, it almost looks like it's on a towel or something with the kind of movement it has. But I've done this. I've done this with a router in the leg vise, secured with my little laminate trimmer, and totally agree it's not the best way to do it. There are certainly better ways, but if you're doing that quick little eighth-inch round over, your actual amount of exposed blade is really, really limited. So I'm not, again, not saying that this is a great idea. I'm right there with you, Matt. This is something I've done in the right hands. It could be made safer, but I don't know that I would say that it is an absolutely smart way to go, especially if things are tipping and moving. You'd want that thing secured and to turn it into a tiny little router table.
Yeah.
I think we're missing an opportunity for a guest here, an opportunity to bring Matt Vanderlist back to talk about the Palm router incident.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
When he took the palm routing part literally and had it dance on his palm.
Yep.
When we could ask him what it's like to grab a running router bit.
He would know. And I think he would disagree with that other commenter.
It was not, it was very uncomfortable.
So here's a good plug for Rockler. They have a beautiful little convertible benchtop router table.
Yeah.
And I have thought about this so many times. The eighth inch roundover is like my go-to edge treatment. Almost every project gets it to some degree in some location. So I have a laminate trimmer, just a little Milwaukee battery power dealie. Works great for that. But you know what would be better is if I had just a standalone, small, doesn't take up a whole lot of room, little router table setup that all it does all day long is that little roundover. That's a lot of like money to spend on something like that.
I saw it in
the
store and it was actually pretty slick because they actually have it where it's like, you can have it wall mounted, so it folds up flat to the wall, and then it flops down.
That's pretty cool.
Or you can take it to the workbench with the stand, or you can take the top off the stand and just clap it to your table. Or use it. No, you can flip it upside down. And use it as a big base plate.
Base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to recommend
it. Kind of a slick thing.
It's like a gateway router table.
It really is. Well, but either a gateway router table or router table B. Because you've already got one.
And there we go. Yeah, right.
This is the one that's just set up for that extra task. I love this thing. So I'm going to have to see if I can get one of those for free, because that's the kind of guy I am.
I love this thing.
I'm just being honest.
Not enough to buy it, but...
I'm just being honest here. I'll buy the router.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, here we go.
Look, I'm just doing it for the audience. I want them to be safe, and I want
them
to see.
Selfless.
I want them to see us doing safe things. That's the reason why. Why I need this for free.
It's so selfless.
Really, it's a selfless incredible thing, guys. Always thinking about other people. All right,
my router plane in it.
I think that's going to do it for us today. Let's get.
Yeah, that's probably a good place to wrap it up. That's
probably should.
Family owned since 1954, Rockler is your go-to source for high quality and innovative woodworking tools, finishing supplies, hardware, lumber, and expert advice. Whether you're building a simple bookshelf, a custom desk, or new kitchen cabinets, Rockler has everything you need to make your next project a success. Visit Rockler.com and use the code WOODTALK, all one word, to receive free shipping on most orders over $49. And remember to head to Rockler.com/WOODTALK to enter for your chance to win a $250 gift card.
Yeah, use it to buy a convertible benchtop router table.
Do it. Or buy one for me.
Yeah, we're by. There you go. Yeah, great. We're gonna start a Kickstarter for Mark to fund
GoFundMe
his
would be more
router top. Yeah,
appropriate here. It's
when your router's rocking or when the Rockler's rocking. Yeah, never mind. Oh God, folks, if you're still listening at this point, thanks. Really nothing else to say. Yeah, we apologize. And please send us your questions so that we can have a more on-point show than what we just had. Go to woodtalkshow.com. You can submit your questions there. Or, you can just email us, or you can record a voicemail like Alex did earlier. And email that to woodtalkshow@gmail.com. You can also find us on Instagram. Margaret's doing a great job over there. Woodtalk Show. I just totally forgot what it was for a second there.
Where am I? What am I doing?
Woodtalk something? It's on Instagram. You'll find it. And we appreciate your questions. We love your questions. It keeps the show going.
All right. Well, thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll catch you next time.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.